Bacon is now the ultimate power in the universe.
The Pat and AJ Podcast.
Well, because they got great banter. They jib-jab, 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 jib-jab.
Pat and AJ.
I feel like the conversation we've been having in the last 5 minutes is a lot more interesting than the shit they're talking about on the radio. Just moronic commentary and stupid sound effects, and it's just dumb. It doesn't make any sense.
It's the Pat and AJ Podcast. It's the Pat and AJ
Podcast. This room absolutely stresses me the fuck out.
This is your room, by the way. This is not my room. This is your room. Our recording studio officially became yours like within 2 seconds of us moving here. Yeah. So why does the room stress you out? Because all the dog toys and shit?
Because like for me to have an office, I need things to be in order. And nothing in here is in order and none of it's mine. Like there are because the dog gets up with me at 1:30 in the morning and comes in here and either sleeps or bones or whatever. But you know, normally I have his toys put away. Within seconds, he barks at the basket, so you'll empty them.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like having a toddler that you just never clean up after.
It's like very much toddler-esque where the toddler wakes up and like it's 6:30 in the morning.
Empties every bin of toys, just sits in the middle and plays.
They don't have object permanence. No. They need to see everything.
Yeah. So there are dog toys all over this room. And now our son has started using it as a dumping ground for his band stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because our son's room now is too. It's awesome to see AJ give up on our son's room. So our son's room is officially just like it's hoarding. It's I don't know. It's a bomb went off. But our son is smart enough to now know.
He's a teenage boy.
He's smart enough to know, shit, if I need something that I need taken care of, I can't put it in my room.
Nope.
He's learning the first reason why Americans started buying storage spaces.
Yep.
Our son has maxed out his storage, which in right now in his place in life is his room and his closet, right? And I kid you not, that motherfucker has stuff. I don't mean motherfucker like negatively. It's like homie. In my vernacular, it means like homie.
He's
right?
taller than us and he's 18. We're at that level.
This mama right here. I go, look, this homie, he has maxed out all of his.
He's listening to us.
I know he is. And so he, like all Americans then, is like, well, I need
more space.
More space. Why would I ever downsize or get rid of my shit? I'll just buy more space. Now, he doesn't have the resources or the need yet to go to an actual storage space. Yeah. So he has migrated his shit across the hallway into AJ's room. And so he's basically storing his shit in your room. I'm staying out of this trade war. See, there's a global goddamn trade war going on. I'm down the hall in my room. As long as you guys both keep your shit out of my room, as soon as I see any of your shit show up in my room, this is going down.
See, that's my problem. I have like one teeny tiny corner of this office that I usually try to keep pretty clean.
Yeah.
And then I feel like behind me, when I sit there and do my work, I feel like there's a dumpster fire right behind me. I just don't look at it.
Now, hold on. This is something I actually didn't want to talk about. We're pretty loosey-goosey with the podcast, but I tend to sometimes write down ideas, and sometimes they don't get used that week, and they sit on a piece of paper. But I have one that this is a perfect time to talk about it. AJ has done finally. I had his big epiphany one night. I was probably fucked up. But the big epiphany goes like this. AJ, as you know, complained about me when we moved in. This is a boy who's never cleaned up after himself. And we all know my story. I grew up with the grandma. And my grandma, because she loved me and was traumatized by losing her own son to a terrible death, she cleaned my room. My room got terrible. It would get messy. And one day I'd wake up and it would be spick and span.
Unbelievable.
Because grandma, while I was at school, would clean it. Notice, by the way, my mother is also in the house, but she's not doing any of this.
No,
that's a whole nother side podcast called Pat's Traumas.
Pat's mentally ill mother.
That'd be great. Pat's mentally ill mother. Fuck,
that's a good name. How I Met Your Mentally Ill Mother.
Dylan, write that down. That's a good podcast idea. How I Met Your Mentally Ill Mother. But so listen, AJ's then like, well, I can't be mad because that's what happened with you, but that's what's going to happen with our son. And our son now has officially gotten to the part in his life that I reach as well, where he leaves his room, as we've just discussed, which is maxed out with stuff. He leaves, he goes to school, and he comes home, and it's spick and span.
Well,
because loosely. Mama Clark comes swooping in. Not grandma, but mama.
I will say once this year. Keep you in mind, clean it's up April. Now. No, once this year. Yeah, I used to.
You still do.
No, once this year I have cleaned his room top to bottom, and that's just because he was wildly sick and it was his first day back at school. And I'm like, oh my God, his bedding needs to be washed. Like, this room is just germy and gross. But, so I cleaned it head to toe. I do feel like our son, would you like to offer a rebuttal? Because you know, he's hovering by the door.
He is just, he's the audience. He is, he's like the producer off camera who's very upset about the bit.
He's half pissed, but he's half smiling. I know.
If you want to talk about this, but you have to listen. Get down here, talk on a microphone. Yes, no one's going to hear you up there. Yes. I haven't had a guest in the studio for a long time. Rebuttal to everything. We're talking a whole bunch of shit about you and you're right there. So what do you want to say? Go ahead.
I will just say that right now you are like twisting everything that happened into something malicious while simultaneously excusing the fact that you're just as messy as me, if not twice as messy. Yeah.
No. I'm going to comp to that. And here's where this whole thing is going to come full circle. Right.
Sick Dylan? Burn.
Okay. So I'm like you, which means you'll grow up to be like me. And then there's going to be
technically it means just he's like you. He's like because me. You came first.
Then there's going to be, like all mammals, there's going to be a mating dance one day. And what you're going to do is, I'm telling you, Dylan, this is no bullshit. Multiple times in my life, I had messy ass apartments. I would bring home women. Get your mind out of the gutter. These women, and one of them—
Wasn't your apartment the gutter?
Hold on. One of them I married, by the way.
Yes, I can attest his apartment was a gutter.
I would go to work and I would come home from work and magically my apartment was spick and span. Why? Not because my grandmother had raised from the grave. Not because I made enough money for a maid service. It was because it is part of our innate ritual. We're like men and women. We offer things back and forth. And you're like, listen, look at you, messy boy. I can clean up your apartment just like I can clean up your life. Thank you, folks. That'll be $30 on the way out. I want you to make an appointment for 2 weeks. All right. No, but that's what I'm saying, Dylan. I am like you. But then look, I found someone who loves cleaning after me. So maybe you can find a woman.
Did you just say loves?
I think you enjoy it. You like taking care of me. If I all of a sudden could clean better than you, you'd be displaced.
That's very true, but the word love is strong.
If I could all of a sudden, if I tomorrow woke up and said, Mother, I love doing laundry, folding it properly and getting it all put together, and I did that like a drill sergeant, I guarantee you, you'd feel displaced.
This is so funny because I normally clean the house. We're recording this on Thursday night. I normally clean the house on Thursday nights, and I've decided tonight I don't want to, which is just hilarious that we're having this conversation. So Dylan, do you want to would you be cool in life with like going to work and making money and having a woman at home who cooks and cleans for you? Is that kind of what you're looking for?
I mean, I'm not saying it needs to be like Leave It to Beaver. No. Because being you
but
work.
There are women who like to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I agree. But I'm just saying, you famously in our relationship for the moment, we both work and she makes a lot more money than I do. But you still enjoy doing some of the domestic
You've
things.
You've got to stop with the word enjoy and love. I don't know who you're talking to.
Why
do I do it? Because I can't live in filth.
I would never do anything I don't enjoy doing. So you're telling me all this cleaning you do all the time
is because I cannot
live every second of it?
If I loved it, then would I say, think about this.
Feel like we have Cinderella here now. She must hate her existence. She's just scrubbing away.
If I love to clean the house, would I say, yes, I don't want to clean the house tonight? There are very few things that you love that you say, but I don't want to do it. I do it because I can't live or relax in filth.
Yeah, I don't have anything like that I do.
No, you keep saying enjoy, love. Okay. You know what I enjoy?
What do you enjoy?
A clean fucking house.
See, and here's the weird part, though. The times that I've tried to get other people to clean the house, she doesn't want other people to clean the house.
We've only done that once.
But you didn't know twice. You didn't like it.
Twice. Hang on, our son is leaning.
Our son desperately wants to leave. So what I was saying was, if you're not a clean, orderly dude, that's fine. But make sure one day, don't marry someone who's like you. You're going to need to marry or hook up or click up with someone who likes to do the cleaning. And, you know, you got to compliment each other. Go ahead. Go ahead and talk to everyone. Tell them how much dad is a blowhard.
Well, that's 5 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah, so there you go. This is what it's like.
And before I go, I just want to say something you're also doing is like you're making it sound like I'm like weaponizing mom's like cleaning habits. You're making it sound like I weaponize them.
Well, now you're taking some words that me and you had and you're repurposing them. So we'll have this conversation. I didn't say you're weaponizing. I said you're smart enough to figure out that your mom, as she just so eloquently said, not that she enjoys cleaning, but she has to get it done. And this is also, by the way, leaning into, we've talked a little bit, AJ, about your ADHD, you know, ADD and
absolutely
a couple neurodivergencies.
I'm medicated for it, okay.
Right? But what I told you was, Dylan, I said, I think you're smart enough where you figured out, well, if I don't do this, my mom needs to scratch that itch. She's going to do it anyways. So I don't think you're weaponizing mom's neurodivergency. I think you are, like a lot of people today, maybe on the market, being a smart observer of the conditions, right? You figured out, okay, she'll do
this.
You're
working smarter, not harder.
Yeah, you're working smarter.
But to be fair, and I do, again, Dylan, this is not just you. I have friends who have teenagers, specifically Nicole from the dog park. I love talking to her about this stuff because she has the exact same kids at the same age with the same problem.
Yeah.
I told myself last year, I am not going to go in his room and clean anymore because it's a lost cause. It's not encouraging him to clean. It's just encouraging him to mess it up so I clean. So last year I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. Like I said, the only time I really, and when I say really cleaned his room, I mean like mop the floor and stuff, was when he was sick back in January. I gave him the day that he went back to school and I cleaned his room. I washed his bedding and everything. When I say I pick up his room now, I do get to a point where if I can't walk in it, I do go a little bit crazy. But I just pick up a few things and I leave the rest of the crap all over the place. And I say, I picked up your room a little. But it's not enough to warrant him not cleaning it.
See, Dylan's going to be smart one day. He's going to own a home in a climate where they have grass. And now, get this, there are people on Instagram who, for the views, go around to shitty houses who don't mow their lawn. And they go up to the door and they go, can I mow your lawn for free?
Yes.
And every person goes, that's the best idea ever.
Obviously.
And then the person films it and they're like, look at me. I'm awesome. So he's working smart. He's realized, you know, mom's going to freak out. You're going to walk in there and not be able to like get within a foot. The other day was funny, Dylan, though, when I couldn't open the door.
Thank you.
It was awesome. There was a day. Like where you could only get the door open like what? Like 2.5-3 feet? That was a fire hazard.
That's what worries me. If there was a fire, would he be able to get out of his room?
Geez,
Thank God we are a one level house. Open that window and jump. He'd have to jump from the bed to the window though, because there's so much stuff on the floor.
He would jump through the window.
The floor would probably be on fire already.
It'd be like a Roger Rabbit, you know, kinda like out the door, but Dylan, would you like to get on with your day? I feel like you're sitting here being tortured by listening to us.
Oh, look at the puppy. The dog's coming over to him like pawing at him like, it's okay. You don't have to clean your room.
I'm going to move on to other stuff. All right. You got anything else you want to say?
Thank you for joining us. If you don't.
Future Wildcat, nothing.
I want these minutes of my life back.
There you go.
All right. I'll work on that.
That's twice. You got to come up with more than one line.
Yeah, I mean, but you know. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. People like to hear you, Dylan.
Not as quick on his feet verbally as I was.
He'll get there.
Hey, everyone. Welcome on in. It is the Pat and AJ podcast. I did remember what fucking episode it was till we got off track. Hey, it's 267.
Wow.
That's right. 267 episodes, a few of them now taken down off various platforms because of copyright violations.
Really?
And stuff. Yeah, we got a few.
Oh, whatever.
But it's really weird because they're all distributed from one, not to bore people, but you know, they all kind of get distributed from one source, right? Like we have one cock that kind of shoots out like the Pat and AJ podcast.
In all different directions.
It goes bam! And then where it
He is making gestures right now.
And then when we shoot it out, it all lands, and like one lands on Spotify, one lands on Apple Podcasts, one lands on whatever. And I think Spotify, you know, because they're by far probably the biggest, which means they have the most, they're probably keeping eyes on things. They just highlighted a few episodes, which, by the way, one or two were bullshit, but two or three, I was like, nah, you're right on that.
Yeah, you know.
Right. You're right.
Was it any of your Uncle Pat's,
two of them, which is all the copyrighted music. But usually I try to play pretty bands that wouldn't mind that stuff, but when you start getting into any kind of commercial stuff.
Anything, yeah.
So, welcome on into the podcast. It's good to be here. We are freshly back from a daydream in Las Vegas. John Mayer summed that up really great.
If you ever wondered what it's like to go to a Dead and Company show at the Sphere, which maybe you haven't because you don't give a shit at all.
Maybe you're not a Deadhead.
But, and that's fine. That's cool, man. You're probably sick of hearing us talking about it.
You're not listening.
But John Mayer posted an Instagram after our show last weekend just describing what it's like to be at one of these shows and why they're so amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up. He said, what a couple of weekends at Sphere with Dead and Company. Hard to explain the connections that take place at these shows. From Thursday afternoon to late Saturday night, we all meet up in the same dream. We have the best times imaginable with 17,000 of our friends, and then we all crash out on couches come Sunday. Somehow still connected by what we experienced. There's nothing like this, and there's more to come.
Goddamn right there is.
Yeah, we went off to Vegas. We saw the Dead Forever experience once again at the Sphere.
We saw Andy Cohen at the Sphere.
Andy Cohen.
Bravo, Andy.
For those of you who were hip to Bill Walton, basketball player, sports legend, he was one of the most visible, famous Deadhead out there.
Yeah.
A lot of Deadheads, some in, you know, there have been senators and all types of people you wouldn't expect. But Bill Walton was always, you could spot him at Grateful Dead shows throughout the decades. And Bill, of course, has passed away.
And now Andy Cohen is taking his spot.
Andy Cohen, like, I think out there, the most famous mainstream Deadhead.
Yeah.
At least with the new Dead and Company experience, because, you know, he's everywhere. You look, you'll find Andy, and yeah, Andy was having a good time with the show.
He's been on the Stern Show talking about the Dead at the Sphere, I loved.
His clip, him and Anderson, who I often compare to me and my bestie. They were doing the New Year's Eve thing, and I was watching it. I was watching it with
my mom.
With your mom. We're watching, like, Diplo on acid, it was like the most amazing night ever. I said, man, I wish I'd been watching this show forever. But when they got into the whole, like, what do you look back on in the year, all that shit, Andy Cohen reflected back on, at that time, the only Sphere run that the Dead had done last summer, which we also attended. And he goes into, like, oh my God, it was so great. And Anderson Cooper, in his little girly giddish laugh, loses his mind laughing. Because, of course, there's famous Instagram video that you can find of Andy dressed like an asshole, dancing like an asshole, because that's what you do at a Dead show. And Anderson Cooper just lost his mind. And Andy Cohen famously looked at him and goes, have you ever heard of fun?
I mean, it's true.
Do you ever do anything fun?
These shows are pure fun.
Fun, yeah.
4 hours of fun. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, and really, if you watch the video of him dancing and, like you said, dressed like an asshole, he does look ridiculous. But if you've been there and you've been to a show there, you're like, yep, that's what it looks like.
That's about what it is.
I mean, if you're wondering what we wear to the shows, just go to our social media. We wore matching tie-dye overalls this last weekend.
Shout out to our friends at Noice Dyes out of San Diego doing their flavoralls. The hottest. They're not overalls, folks.
They're flavorals. They're
flavorals.
They were overalls at one time.
Yeah.
Until he breathed it. Until Brett Favre, literally his name, breathed his magic into these overalls. They're the coolest thing
I
own.
It was like when God breathed life into Adam when he made the little mold. That's what Brett did with when he took his first pair of Dickies and he tie-dyed them.
Did you see, by the way, he lost his little creative space?
Yeah, he lost a studio.
Yeah,
wonder
he's
why.
Like, can I just have somebody's garage, please?
It's got to be a messy operation, tie-dyeing. My God.
Well, tie-dye is messy in general.
In general, right?
Because I've tie-dyed a few things in my life. But if I know why he charges so much for these flavorals.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine tie-dyeing a dark denim garment to the point that it looks good. That's a lot of work. It's hard enough just to tie like a tie-dye a white cotton t-shirt.
I
mean, t-shirt.
I was going to say...
I would imagine it's a messy-ass venture.
I've got a real good friend of mine that I met in grad school, and she lives on the East Coast, and her man does tie-dyeing. He's back in the game. Hellstrom dies, and he had tie-dyed a white dress for you. And you were amazed at just like the steps, because he kept like, you know, like anyone who takes pride in their work, like he wanted to let you know every step he was doing. Like, yes. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And you were sitting there as someone who had maybe just tie-dyed based off like a Google recipe.
Yeah, like I go to like Michael's and buy the tie-dye kit. Yeah, that's what
like,
I've done.
But these are how like the pros do it. Yeah. And you're like, man, this guy's it's like an doing, art. This guy's doing some shit, man. And but it was it was a great
Andy
time.
Andy Cohen was having a blast.
Had a great time
every time because I would turn around and look at the rest of the sphere behind me because it was like mind blowing to remember that you're in that place. And every time I'd turn around, I'd see him in his rich people box.
Bunch of very happy hippie gays. All with Andy Cohen.
Having a blast, but it was fun. I will tell you though, do not, and I repeat, do not go to Vegas when you're tired.
Holy shit, dude.
I'm serious.
I brought Rip Van Winkle with me to Las Vegas. I think I hung out more with blackjack dealers and cocktail waitresses. I felt like when myself and AJ, and I'll let you get to your story, when myself and AJ first, whatever, connected in the universe, right? When the universe draws together, I was married. She was dating some dude forever that she was trying to kind of like finally shake off. But I will never forget when we were first kind of infatuated with each other. She called me and I said, "Where are you at?" She goes, "I'm in Las Vegas." Mind you, we were in Milwaukee. Yes. That's where everyone lived at this time. And I go, "Oh, you're in Las Vegas."
It was the first time I ever took a spring break trip in college. Yeah. And I think it was my senior year.
She goes, "I'm in Las Vegas with, you know, whatever you called them at your time. I believe you were trying to go the friend route." And I was like, mm-hmm. But you said, "Man..." You know, I said, "How you doing?" And, you know, we were talking and he said, "Well, I really haven't seen the guy that I came with."
Yeah, he was gone.
Which I will say, as a guy who was very infatuated with you, I was happy about.
This
was good news.
I knew it.
I didn't want to hear you say like, "Oh my God, we're going to dinners and shows and he's staring into my eyes and I have a glass of champagne." Instead, she goes, "Well, I haven't seen this guy. Because he's like really into gambling." And this is a long time ago, folks. I know now 12-year-olds are looking at me like I'm a dickhead because they already made $72,000 this year off the sports book. But back then, there really wasn't a lot of gambling. There wasn't online gambling.
Also was a great card counter.
Well, yeah, he was into gambling. So this
And he actually got banned from casinos.
You know, back when you literally kind of had travel to do this. So basically, AJ went on a Vegas spring break trip with a addicted gambler.
Yeah.
And which meant she's like, "Yeah, I've kind of been alone this whole trip. Like, he's just..."
he's just at the tables all night. He appears back in the hotel room at like 7 a.m. And I'm like, "Well, I slept all night, so I'm going to go like to breakfast and the pool and you're going to go to bed and I'll see you maybe tomorrow."
And I kind of said, "Boy, I'm replicating what my wife went through with that man," because she was not stuck at a table. She was stuck in bed.
I was so tired. By the way, get your foot off his toy. That's what he
wants.
I'm
playing with him.
Oh, you're playing.
We're having fun. Leave me and my dog alone. Fucking Karen.
I don't know why I was so tired. I mean, I think it's just life and stress.
Well,
and
set up the weeks leading up to it. You had March Madness, which for you is the Irish dance thing. You were doing the Irish dance thing.
I was also doing the Irish dance thing on steroids because the owner of our dance school died.
Yes, that's in
January. So I was literally running every single show. I mean, there was nobody else to do it.
You know what you're like? You're like the fucking NFL coach who, if they were on their way to the Super Bowl and won a game before the NFC Championship, the coach dies. And then there's an assistant coach who's like, "I just got to get this team through two games."
And that's exactly what it was.
Like, that's all I got to do is like, and then I can sleep. And you kind of had that attitude where you were like, "I need to get my school to St. Patrick's Day." You were going.
I know. And to be fair, it has been handed off to another wonderful person who's taken over our school. But I really hadn't had a chance to breathe for the last 3 months. And when we got to I could not keep my eyes open. And it was,
she couldn't keep her eyes open on the way that, I mean, the way psychologically, her mind must have known that she was officially off duty.
Yeah.
Because, and by the way, here's the funny part. This is how my wife works. And yes, this is why she always ends up cleaning our son's room. She's also not mentioning during all this, she's also moving her mother.
Oh, yeah.
From Wisconsin to Oro Valley, Arizona. Oh, that's right. You heard me right. In between all this, she's on the phone talking to U-Hauls.
I'm finding her a place.
She is selling items online.
I'm going to her place, putting together furniture in any spare minute I had.
So we get in the car. It's a six hour drive to Las Vegas.
I didn't even work that day either. That was my thing. Like, usually I can work in the morning and just sleep in the car. I took the day off.
We get in the car about noon on Friday. It's going to be a quick run, right? Like, we're driving in Friday.
We're coming back Sunday.
Like, we're going to the Saturday show.
Yeah.
Bing, bang, boom. And of course, she goes, all right, listen, you let me know how you want to split up the drives. I'd really like to drive into Vegas this time.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, no problem.
The second half of the drive is so cool. It is so neat. It's not just Vegas. The scenery is incredible. All
of
it is
because you go through Southern Arizona to, of course, the glorious metro of the Phoenix Valley. And then you hit Northern Arizona, which is legitimately different. That's Four Seasons, right? Yeah. That's Flagstaff. That's different areas. Prescott, you know, Wickenburg, places that have different climates. And then all of a sudden, you're in this weird, cool patch of Nevada where it's like Joshua trees and shit. It's wild. Yeah, I'm saying all that because I'm the one who drove that patch.
The whole thing.
Because I drove the whole thing. We pulled out of this driveway at noon on Friday, and I go, all right. I said, I'll kick off the drive. I'll let you know when I want you to take over. And I don't even know if we got to I-10, and she was like, I think I'm just going to, where's my pillow?
I brought my big pillow with me.
I just need to rest my eyes. By the way, she had just gotten up like 3 hours earlier. I don't want you to think like she had worked her little overnight news job. She had already slept 8 hours. She had woken up, had coffee, had breakfast, and now is like, I think I need
to
recharge.
I'm going to go back to sleep.
And she basically did that kind of move for the next 6 hours. Until we showed up in Las Vegas.
And then we got to Vegas. We went to eat at the restaurant in the hotel.
Like, we check in at 7 o'clock, which is good timing, because that's right when the Dead show starts.
And we're staying at a hotel Friday. Where all the Deadheads stay, yeah. So it's empty. We're like, cool, we'll go to dinner. We'll maybe, you know, play the tables a little bit.
Fun little, like Friday night after this, you know, getting out of Arizona.
And we went to dinner.
Yeah.
We gambled for maybe 45 minutes. And I said, I have to go back to bed.
That's right.
And then Pat went out and partied with the Deadheads after the show.
Yeah, there was a band. We had a band. I was partying to like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, came back. She's asleep.
I may have been tired, but I would like to point out that I did play a table for the very first time ever.
Hey, yeah, shout out to, we always said, AJ's ex-boyfriend, the one we were just talking about there. She said, oh my God, if this guy didn't hate me, because it was like a really bad breakup. We've all had those breakups where you're like, I can't ever talk to that person again.
Yeah, he won't talk to me ever.
So she goes, but oh my God. God, I would love to call him. And of course, I'm like, well, that's interesting. Why would you say that? And she goes, because I played a table.
Yeah,
he was like apparently a big card guy and you didn't get it. And he was always trying to figure it out to you. And you just were like, this.
So yeah, he was the first person I thought of. I'm like, if he would talk to me, I would love to just call him and be like, dude, I played a table for the first time. You'd be so proud of me.
How'd you do?
Not well. It's a very weird, like, because I love blackjack. I'm really good at simple math.
It's the only game you play, by the way. Yeah,
I don't play poker or anything else like that or crap. But I love blackjack. I love the simple math. For me, that's fun. But I was having a bad night at the digital blackjack, and I don't know why I decided to use the money I had left and go to a table. And it was like a movie. Like, the casino was almost empty because, like you said, all the people staying there were at the show.
We're staying at the Tuscany, and the Tuscany has been adopted by the Deadheads, so it's all Deadheads.
And they cater to the Deadheads now. They have, like, tie-dye tables and shit. It's awesome.
So this place, and that's why I worked it out like this. I said, listen, we're going to roll into town when that place is a ghost town. We're going to be able to get dinner, no problem. We're going to be able to bounce around the casino, no pressure, no problem. I mean, you could have seen a tumbleweed blow through the casino. and you then recreate National Lampoon's Las Vegas Vacation, where you're like, just take money, like here, like take it all away. Go.
I played some digital. I took out $100 because that's what I could afford to lose. I played 40 on digital blackjack.
Yeah.
Or I think, you know what? 20 on digital blackjack. Okay. 20 on the slots. With slots, I'm just done with. What a fucking joke.
Slots are pretty hard to understand. Horrific. These days.
Just horrible. Yeah. Why are there 16 different lines with buffaloes and birthday cakes and shit? What is all this? I swear to God, they make it fancy and flashy like that so you understand it even less.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I had played $20 on slots, $20 on digital blackjack. Of course, lost it all. So I had $60 left. Pat was like chatting it up with somebody in a bar. And I was like, you know what? I'm getting tired, but I really would love to try to play a table. And like you said, it was a ghost town. There was one table that was like,
no pressure.
There was one blackjack table that was jumping. People were cheering, having a good time. And then the table next to them was empty. And I walk by and the dealer, he's like, come on over. You know, he called me like pretty lady or something, you know? And I was like, I'm thinking about it. And I swear to God, I looked at the table. It was tie-dye for the dead shows.
Where else are you going
to
go?
I took like six more steps and immediately turned around and went to the table. But I'm like, this is good. I'm alone. There's no pressure on me.
This is how hard it is in Thailand for all those legal hookers to like get guys. Because there's a guy walking by kind of looking. They go, come in now.
Come on in. Come on in.
Suck your balls. Suck your cock.
It really felt like that. I felt like I was being propositioned.
You're like, twist my arm. Yeah. I'm fucking here. Take my money.
So I sat down. It wasn't in any way, shape, or form as intimidating as I thought it would be. Except, you know, towards the end, and it was like a breakup. It was like, it's not you, it's me. I couldn't tell if I was just making, if it was just a bad night for me, or if I was making bad decisions.
Isn't that funny how, because you, now you're a true gambler, because those are all the things that you take into account other than logic. Like,
yeah.
You want to be like, I think the table's gone cold.
Yeah, totally.
I think I got bad luck tonight. I think the fucking cat meowed three times at the moon. Other than no one really wants to say, well, this is a strategic game that has odds. The odds are against me. So I guess it's going just according to plan. I am losing money. They're taking money.
I was struggling. And right towards the end, I think I had like $20 left.
Yeah.
This guy sits down next to me, just this weary ass middle aged dude who looked like he had been run through a blender. And he sits down next to me.
Average deadhead.
Yeah. Well, no, he wasn't a deadhead at all. Oh, no. He was one of the few that wasn't.
Oh, no.
He sat down and, you know, put like $100. It was a $10 table.
Yeah.
So he put down $100 and we're, you know, the only two at the table. And eventually he gets so frustrated and he goes to the dealer. He goes, you want to help me out with some face cards or what? And I laughed because I'm just that kind of person. And he looked at me dead in the eyes, like with the most serious face. If he could have said, shut the fuck up, he would have. And I was like, oh, he's a serious gambler that is not amused right now.
Yeah, it is.
But that's also when I realized maybe it's not me. Maybe we're just getting dealt bad hands tonight.
Yeah, it's, well, one, AJ learned the most obvious lesson, because you said there was one table that was jumping and then there was another table
that was empty.
Did you figure out why?
Yes, because the table that was jumping was $5.
There you go.
The table I was at was 10.
I had to, like, literally, we're sitting at dinner and AJ's hyping herself up. It's like when you went to lunch with a friend in high school and he was trying to pump himself up to ask out a girl to, yes, like, prom. He's like, all right, man, so I'm just going to go up to her right after science class and I'm going to say, Juliet, why don't me? No, I mean, will you go to prom? That's because during dinner, she's sitting there like, okay. So how do I hit?
I made Pat, while we were waiting for dinner, I made him sit on the other side of the table and I pulled up my blackjack game on my phone and we acted it out.
I was I was dealing salt and pepper and sugar
packets
and sweet and low. That's and literally. So, like, you know, but you figured out one of those things, which is the lower minimum table. And I said, listen, there's going to be minimum bets. And that's the minimum you have to play. Now, these days in Vegas, I don't know, last time you all been, you cannot play a hand of blackjack on the strip for less than $20 a hand.
No, and this was, when I say off strip, I mean like a block off strip.
I mean, we're not far.
No, yeah, but.
Not far.
And I was just willing to spend the $10 a hand because the table was empty and I wanted to go at my own pace because it was my first time.
But listen, the lower the minimum the table, the more fun it is.
They were having a blast. Because I was jealous.
There's not that guy, the guy who you said sat down, because that's the guy who just spent his fucking mortgage money.
He's been gambling for 7 hours. He's like, exhausted.
He's somehow trying to balance the books by the end of the year so it doesn't look like he lost $127,000.
Except he did.
Except he absolutely did, and he ain't going to win it back.
Yeah, I wanted the fun people.
Yeah, when you're at the fucking minimum and people are getting free, like Miller Lights, that's like people start hooting and... Oh, this is what we need to watch. I'm describing one of the greatest scenes in cinema history. In Swingers, the entire scene between Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn coming to Vegas, Fremont Street, and then basically going through this, where, you know, Favreau's thinking, where do I gamble? He tries to go to the high stakes table, kind of gets flushed out, and then he ends up at the minimum stage one, where everyone is having good times. There's someone in a motorized scooter. I think there's a little person. You know, they got cigars in their mouths. Yeah, you got to watch that movie. That was you. Good times though in Las Vegas, folks. I'll say it again. The city of sin, more and more I go, I think it's about as American as apple pie.
But we realized, and this is important to do, if you haven't gone to, if you went to Vegas when you were like younger, and I don't even
mean how young.
I mean like
give me a year.
Late 20s, early 30s. If you haven't gone to Vegas in a while, go now and really go as an adult. Because I was nervous about going back to Vegas for the first time because we hadn't gone in more than 10 years.
And that was last year, right?
That was last year. Yeah. And the last time we went before that, we were like out at a club partying at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it was easy, but it was easier. And in my head, I'm just like, I don't know if I can handle Vegas at this age. You can handle Vegas at any age. Go be an adult. Go to bed at a reasonable hour. Like you
go to bed the whole time.
Go to sleep AJ. The whole time.
I mean, AJ.
No, I'm not going to lie. I had a lot of FOMO being that tired. I'm like, I want to do is sleep, but there's so much happening out there.
I mean, I was like seriously, to like bring it all back together. I mean, AJ, you know, she called it early every night. I mean, you did make it obviously through the entire Dead show. You went out to eat afterwards.
I didn't go to bed till 2 o'clock on the night of the Dead show.
That was a good one. Good for you. But I mean, you were a tired. It's like your body. Just knew you were out of your home, you were out of your duties.
I think that's a very much a female/mom thing.
Yeah, turn it off.
Seriously, your body knows when you can just turn it off for even a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, everything rushes back to you and your body's like, you need to sleep, bitch. Like mm-hmm. Now you've needed to sleep, but you haven't. Now you can.
Yeah.
But it's really, I will say, it's really cool living 6 hours from Vegas.
It is a hoot, man. I'm not going to lie. Talking to all the heads who came in from all around the country. We talked to a bunch of Sconnies, by the way. I mean, from Wisconsin Rapids, people from Plover.
We met somebody from Plover.
Plover.
Which was amazing. I mean, we're like, she knew exactly where we lived. She knew she knew everything.
But you meet people from all over, and that's when you realize, and you're like, yeah, we're in Arizona, and everyone's eyes goes, oh, you're close. And that's, you can drive.
All my friends now who I used to live in the Midwest with are like, wow, you've gone to Vegas a lot in the last couple of years. Yeah. And for them, and it's still hard for me because in my head, we still live in the Midwest, and going to Vegas is a gigantic, long, complicated trip. But really, it's not. It's a six-hour drive.
You can go on a weekend. Desert.
And they're like, yeah, you've gone a lot. I said, yeah, it's because we can drive. Now it's just a weekend trip, and it is bizarre.
Well, and you know, once you have the Midwest battle training, which is unique to Midwesterners, where we do drive 5 hours for everything, 5 hours doesn't scare you.
No.
Now, if you are on the East Coast, by the way, 6 hours can take you from Boston to New York to Philly. I mean, you can like work your way down. But in the Midwest, I feel like most of us and the Plains, you get very battle tested for like long drives. And then it is interesting being out here because then you have to go, oh, you mean San Diego is 5 hours. Los Angeles is six hours.
It takes forever
to get used
to. Las
Vegas is six. And now it's like, oh, well, that's like you said, a weekend.
I know. My mom is so excited. She's arriving here on Saturday to actually live here. And I'm so excited
about it. Moving in. She's saying goodbye to Wisconsin. Your mom is
forever.
Well, your mom's a native Fib.
Yes.
And for folks who don't know, that's what Wisconsinites do to try to talk bad about Illinois folks. Yes. They call us Fibs. It stands for fun in bushels.
That's not what it's
called. That's what it stands for.
She's from a Chicago suburb. She's from Libertyville, Illinois.
But she's been in Wisconsin since, like, she's 18?
Yeah, since she was, like, a teenager.
Wow.
And she has said, I remember when my dad was alive when I was a little kid, forever, she wanted to move to the West Coast because she had a friend that lived in California. Yeah. She loved visiting her, and she always just said, I want to get to a warmer climate.
I mean, that was her just trying to get away from you and her husband.
Well, probably,
and,
you know, yeah.
She's like, I would like to, I mean, my mom talked about leaving all the time, too.
She really just wanted to leave us.
She wanted to leave.
No. But she had talked about it forever. And I've been trying to get her and my dad out here. I'm like, this will be so good for my dad, his health. I'm like, it's just the weather up there is such shit all year round, minus like 3 months. And I tried to get them both out here. Obviously, my dad died before I could do that. But, you know, when he died, I brought my mom out here for like, what, over a month?
About a month she was here. I think initially it was going to be like 2 weeks, but yeah, she stayed like a month.
She was ready to like call home and say, just throw out all my shit. I'm staying here. So we managed to, you know, get her set up out here. She's got a cute little apartment about 5 minutes from us, which is just incredible. And it's been so cool because my mom can be very wishy-washy about decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like we always knew not to get, really, you don't get her anything as a gift because she'll return it.
Oh, that's right. There's this, I love how families have these unspoken rules.
Yeah.
And we learned, like the one was with your mom, is that she is like the return queen.
Yeah.
For any gift. Listen, you could give her a blood diamond that you found with your own two hands while on safari in West Africa, and she'd be like, is there a way I can return it?
No, though? I will say,
can
all
I
the,
exchange it by any chance?
All the jewelry my dad ever got her, she never returned. But anything else, if you got her like soap or a sweater, she'd return it.
Yeah.
So I was terrified that with this big decision, because she had 2 full months before she was actually coming out here. I got her an apartment on a deal.
Like between her saying, hey, I think I want to move out there, and then you finding a place, and then you signing. And
literally, I signed the lease because the apartment's like $700 off a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mom, this is great for you. I'm going to sign the lease. We'll just pay double rent for 2 months. And she took the full 2 months. I mean, this was back in early February.
Yeah.
I signed the lease. And I was so afraid that in that time
that
she would call me and be like, I don't know.
Your mom's done that on vacations.
Yeah.
Your mom multiple
she's
times.
She's bowed out last minute.
She's gotten to the airport.
And bowed out.
And then been like, nah, I don't think I want to
I think
go.
A lot of her anxiety comes from having MS. I mean, her disability creates so many problems for her that I think she just has a lot of anxiety, which is understandable. But I did ask the guy, I'm like, okay, is there like a policy? He goes, yeah, she has 30 days to change her mind.
Oh, okay.
And not once, I called her nonstop, just to check on her. Yeah. Not once did she even remotely change her. She was so excited every time I called her.
I mean, you are calling her during winter in Wisconsin.
I know.
I feel like, you know, I mean, making those phone calls, that's like, you know, calling someone here during winter in Arizona. You go, how do you like it? You go, oh my God, this is the most beautiful place in the world. The climate is perfect. And then you call that person back in August and they go, what do you want? It's so hot here. I mean, you called your mom during the absolute doldrums of Wisconsin winter.
I know.
And then you're shocked that she was on board. I mean, didn't you say there were other old folks at the home that wanted to hitch a ride? They're like, listen,
yeah,
I'm stuck in Kenosha.
Yeah, she said everybody she plays bingo with is jealous. And then I sent my aunt a picture of, I finished her patio yesterday. I finished the furniture. I got a little fake palm tree for it. It's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
I sent the picture, and you know, it was like near sunset. It was gorgeous. She goes, love the sun. It's rained here all day in Kenosha.
Oh, is it muddy right
it's
now?
It's mud season, yeah, in
baby.
The Midwest. But listen, we did our time. I get it. But yeah, she's coming here this weekend. She is, and she's got the Midwest mentality too. She's like, oh, I want to go back to Vegas. And I'm like, cool, we'll take a weekend trip. And she's like, that's a lot. And I said, no, it's a drive
6 hours.
Where we are.
Right, right.
It is. It's dangerous, but it's not. Once you learn how to start doing it on a budget, like, because once you do it this often, you don't feel the need to like splurge on the big hotels.
Well, it depends how you do it. If you want to go and stay at the Venetian or something, you can blow a lot of dough. But yeah, if you're driving with a car, you have a little bit more autonomy that way, I suppose, going where you want to go. But it's like anything else. It's a doable little drive.
And I guarantee, I really think after this year, we're going to pull back on our trips because the shine has worn off after this
year. Well, we have another dead show coming up. That's right, folks.
We're going again.
We have another one. And just to answer a question, because this has to be absolutely insane for people that, you know, live out there, not in our daydream. We had someone comment on one of the Pat and AJ socials, and they said, so just a question, aren't you guys, like, tired of seeing this? And it's an interesting one to
ask.
And here's, I'm going to pre-qualify my answer. And of course, the answer is no. But
I see where you'd think that.
But I think that you may believe we are seeing the equivalent to Hamilton.
Yeah, like a musical or a play.
14 times in a row. Which, by the way, I had some friends who really loved Hamilton, and they probably would have, had they had the money, gone to Broadway 14 times in a row to watch Lin-Manuel Miranda rap about U.S. history. But that is not exactly what we're doing. Like I said, different than residencies. Does Adele do the same show in Las Vegas every night? Probably yes.
Yeah.
Does Mariah Carey? We know she does.
Yeah.
The Grateful Dead, and by extension, Dead and Company, the beating heart of the band is no two shows are alike.
Yeah.
And that means, by all typical jam band standards, songs are played in extended ways. Set list.
I did realize, by the way, they're almost all 10 minutes. Yeah. I timed it.
10-minute songs.
Each day, which really is shorter than I thought.
It's not bad. So what we're seeing outside of the band being the same and the venue, which is a plus in this point, right? Because
this is not a normal venue.
Yes. Yeah. You know, this is the Sphere. So it's not like we're just set up at, which a lot of people do, right? Billy Joel, he'll play 90 million shows at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we're seeing and what we've seen now multiple times last year, now this year, is like the most living, breathing kind of performance art that in no way, shape, or form is ever duplicated.
No.
So we could actually probably go to every show in a weekend, and you're not going to see too much outside of some basic elements of the show, which I don't want to ruin for folks, but there are some basic elements to this Sphere show, the visuals, that are very synonymous with everything else. But you're not, I mean, it really is the opposite of going to McDonald's, where you go to McDonald's and you know what the cheeseburger is going to taste like every time. Just imagine they let the chef make it his way every single day.
To put it in context for somebody, and I don't totally consider myself a deadhead yet. I'm on
the
bus.
She's close. She's on the bus.
But I'll tell you, I like.
She's buying tie-dye.
Yeah.
She's buying tie-dye, and when she wears the tie-dye, are you ready here, folks? She gets into drum circles.
I got into a drum circle.
That's right. I have video of my wife in tie-dye banging along.
Well, I'm also a former percussionist, so it was like
Dress it up however you want, but when you start saying I'm not a deadhead, what do you do in your spare time? Wear tie-dye and I bang on some drums in a drum circle.
I've come to realize, in hindsight, 2020, when I was a little kid, I went through a period where I was a little hippie with tie. Like, I loved that scene. I just didn't know why. So it had
a resurgence in the 90s.
To put it in perspective, I was not, I liked the Dead's music, but I'm like, you know, I saw him in concert with Pat once, and I was like, okay, that was fine. I don't think I'd go again. So when he wanted to go to the Sphere, I was like, all right, well, it's your birthday, I'll go. And the shows at the Sphere transformed me into a fan of the band. Again, I don't know if I'd sit through a show without these visuals.
You're like Diplo. Diplo has said now, besides going on CNN and eating acid on New Year's Eve, Diplo literally has the same thing where he said, I'd never knew anything about the Grateful Dead other than the general mystique of the band and the logos. And then he went to a Sphere show and he said, I'm a deadhead now.
Life changing.
And he's like going back and he's like everyone else. He's like, I'm just going
to
keep going.
Trust me, if I were to go see them again outside of the Sphere without the visuals and stuff, I probably...
She'll be there.
I'd be there, but it wouldn't be as much fun.
Trust me.
But it's just, it's really cool, and it is so dangerous just a weekend trip.
But it was just, someone kind of asked that, because I said, it has to, like, you probably do think it's kind of weird, I guess, if you're watching the same episode, but trust me, we are watching something new, fresh, fun, funky, kind of come to life, and then it just floats away, and that's going to change every week, you know? So that's how we spend our weekends.
Wearing tie-dye. Playing in drum circles.
I'm gonna have to post that video of you on in the drum circle.
It was
circle.
Fun. All of my
I do feel like that is peak. Like if you're dipping your toe in, that's like, you know, you're close to jumping in.
I was a drummer in the high school marching band, and I still, mm-hmm. you know, if you've ever played percussion, even if you don't play it anymore, you still know everything. You still kind of bang around everywhere. And like, I was excited to step in and do it, but I also realized very quickly that my hands hurt.
Yeah. I'm you're not up to par like
that. No, I'm like, I am out of practice. Boom, but it was really fun. And I loved, there was this big bus, and on the side of it says, "Don't think, just drum."
Just drum, baby.
And it was true. You really do kind of get lost in it and just forget about everything for a few minutes till your hands start to hurt.
Okay. That's going to be the next poll question, since we've already figured out by overwhelming margin, folks, that I can swear. Fuck yeah. The next one is, AJ says, "Listen, I'm not a deadhead, but I go to Shakedown Street at dead shows wearing tie-dye, and I get into drum circles."
The Pat and AJ Podcast Network is available on all your favorite audio platforms. Subscribe today. Follow Pat and AJ on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook now at Pat and AJ. PatandAJ.com. Support the Pat and AJ Podcast Network today by donating on Venmo or Cash App. Powered by the people. The Pat and AJ Podcast.